Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your window on the world of Iowa politics, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Welcome again, Laura.
Good to be here, Dennis.
Laura, as always, so much to hash out tonight, including a plethora, and I love that word, a plethora, of new Des Moines Register polls on everything from abortion to schools and family values, along with the governor putting her signature onto bills involving gender-affirming care in bathrooms. But we start tonight just briefly with an update on former President Trump, who had predicted last week that he would be arrested. Well, as of 7 o'clock Central Time on this Monday night, he has not been arrested, but that did not stop him from lashing out again on social media about what might happen if he is arrested. Let's get into that.
Yes, he has been using his Truth Social site, and also he had a rally in Waco over the weekend, and lots of airing of grievances, complaining about the criminal investigations, complaining that about the supposed deep state that's out to get him, and almost threatening, coming right up to the edge of threatening the Manhattan attorney who is in the process of convening this grand jury in the Trump case that's related to Stormy Daniels.
He called Manhattan attorney Alvin Bragg a degenerate psychopath. That's Trump's words, not mine. And he warned of, again, his words, potential death and destruction if he is charged. That is wild language, no matter how you look at it, from a presidential candidate.
It is. And the House, the U.S. House Republicans have launched investigations into this criminal investigation. And that attorney, Alvin Bragg, issued a statement saying that this is an unprecedented and inappropriate intervention and interference in an ongoing criminal investigation. It's not something that Congress has done in the past. So I think that this is certainly a collision course. And if the former president is indicted in any other cases related to the alleged election interference in Georgia or the possible misuse of classified documents, I think that it could be a really wild ride next year.
Governor Reynolds weighing in on the possibility of indictment. She doesn't wait for there to be an indictment. She said it would be politically charged prosecution if there is an indictment. And she doesn't at this point, nor do we know what the indictment would be for or in which case.
That's right. And the governor has said that she's not endorsing any candidates before the caucuses, but she's appearing at many of the candidates' events. As we discussed last week, she was with former President Trump in Davenport, and she certainly doesn't want to alienate any of the candidates. So she seems to be trying to walk that line that the former Vice President Mike Pence was saying that it would be, it seems to be the politically motivated, this prosecution. But I mean, we don't know what they're going to come up with, what kind of evidence will be released. We'll have to wait for a possible indictment to find out.
And one more candidate in the GOP caucuses in Iowa next year showed up this past week, and you probably have never heard of him. His name is Perry Johnson. In fact, his TV ads that started airing called him Perry Who.
Right. Yes. I mean, nobody has heard of him, and I don't think many people will hear about him. I mean, he's spending $175,000 on TV ads, but there's just not really a constituency for wealthy business people running for president, although it just seems like every 4 years there are people willing to light a lot of money on fire to try to call attention to themselves during a presidential campaign. I mean, I can't really imagine a lot of people caucusing for Perry Johnson, but sometimes these long shot candidates, they might be angling for something different, like a position in the next Republican administration.
We'll see how well Perry Johnson does in the upcoming caucuses. Yes, indeed. We'll talk more about that. All right, let's get back to the state legislature. So much happened last week. But first, another legislative funnel deadline is coming up this Friday. What does this one mean?
Yeah, so this, again, this applies to bills that are not related to taxes or spending. So not budget bills, not tax bills, but most of the other bills the legislature considers. Remember, the first funnel, a bill had to be approved by at least one committee in either the House or the Senate. The second funnel this Friday, to remain alive, these bills have to be approved by one chamber and a committee in the other chamber. So this week, the House has convening lots of committees on bills that have already passed the Senate and vice versa. There are a lot of Senate committee meetings this week on bills that the House has approved, and we will have a lot to talk about next week. And it doesn't mean if a bill doesn't get through the funnel, it doesn't mean that there's zero chance that it could be brought back. But most of those bills that don't get through the funnel are going to be not considered for the remainder of this year.
All right. Last week, Governor Reynolds signed two gender-affirming bills, one involving gender-affirming care, the other one involving bathrooms, both highly controversial.
Yes, and both bills went into effect immediately upon her signature. And I think that what was upsetting to a lot of people in the LGBTQ community is the day before the governor signed these bills, she had a short press availability. And she said, I hope people know that this isn't easy for me. And I'm very uncomfortable. This makes me very uncomfortable to do this. And we're looking out for the kids' best interest. And that was upsetting to people because the governor has generally not met with groups representing LGBTQ Iowans. And many people didn't appreciate that she implied that this is harder for her than it is for them. Schools all over the state, they made announcements, they sent out emails to families, they put new signs on restrooms immediately on Thursday to make sure that everybody understood that they were going to be complying with this law. I do expect lawsuits to be filed fairly soon. I haven't heard about any lawsuits being filed yet, but again, the one bill that bans gender-affirming care for transgender Iowans under age 18, and the other one that says schools cannot allow transgender people to use bathrooms that align with their gender identity. In other states, similar laws have been challenged in court, and I think it's going to be the same here.
The governor appeared on Fox News last Friday morning saying, and I'm quoting now, I am proud of what we're doing. Meanwhile, there is a new Des Moines Register poll that was out yesterday showing the governor's approval rating had slipped just a bit.
Yes, a little bit down. The last time they measured her approval rating was in October, shortly before the election, 53% approve, 43% disapprove. And now her approval rating is down to 50%. Disapproval is up to 46%. And remember that this is about, it's a snapshot of 800 people, but this is the same 800 people who the Register surveyed, and they've been dribbling out these poll results bit by bit. But so the governor's approval rating is substantially higher than President Biden's among this group. Remember, he was down around 30% approval. But I mean, politicians, I'm sure she would like it to be a little higher than 50%, but 50% is considered a fairly acceptable level, I think, for most incumbents.
And there was a new poll out today, Monday, on a very controversial topic, and that is abortion. It is now legal in Iowa up to 20 weeks. As we know, the legislature is not about to take any action right now. They're waiting for a Supreme Court decision, a state Supreme Court decision. But this poll out today shows that the vast majority of Iowans believe abortion should be legal in most or all cases.
Oh, this is interesting because it's been fairly consistent in the Des Moines Register's polling for years that more Iowans say abortion should be legal than abortion should be illegal. But since the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, the gap seems to be widening. So this is the highest I can recall seeing in an Iowa poll, 61% saying abortion should be legal most or all of the time. And that included more than two-thirds of Iowa women and, of course, the vast majority of Democrats. But I mean, I thought it was quite interesting that about almost 40% of Republicans also felt that abortion should be legal. I mean, that is a pretty high number, I think, for even in the Republican Party. And it's consistent with their polling from last fall that showed that about a quarter of the people who plan to vote for Governor Reynolds for reelection also said they thought abortion should be legal. So I think that the legislature, as you mentioned, they're not planning to do anything this year on abortion, but I think they could be in a little bit of a bind next year, because if the Iowa Supreme Court does not reinstate that 2018 law, which would ban most abortions after about 6 weeks, the legislature is going to be under tremendous pressure from the social conservatives to do something about abortion. And we can see that that is unpopular and will presumably remain unpopular next year.
All right. Enough about what could happen. Let's talk about what did happen in the state House. We'll start with the House from last week. Among the things the House did, it passed a bill requiring carbon capture pipeline companies to reach Voluntary deals with landowners to buy 90% of the land before they could try to use eminent domain. Now, there were so many interesting things about this, but among them is that it was an overwhelming vote, 73 to 20, but it was split, and there were Republicans and Democrats who voted no.
It was a really scrambled vote. As you said, 73 to 20, that the no votes were 9 Republicans and 11 Democrats. And they had many different reasons. I mean, some of the Republicans voted no because they support these carbon dioxide pipelines and they think these projects should be built. And some voted no because they thought this bill didn't go far enough to restrict eminent domain and land grabs potentially by these companies who are seeking to build a pipeline. And they were arguing that this isn't for a public use. On the Democratic side, there were people who they opposed the pipelines, but for different reasons. They think that the bill should have been structured a different way. And then there are Democrats who voted no because they thought these pipelines could create good union jobs in the construction and that the ethanol industry is very important. So again, a really scrambled vote. One thing that I thought was interesting was there was an amendment during the House debate that watered down the bill pretty considerably. So they, as you mentioned, the 90%, they have to have voluntary easements on 90% of the route before they can use eminent domain. But there were other provisions that would have delayed the pipeline permit until after the federal government had finalized new rules on carbon dioxide pipeline safety. That got taken out. There was a provision that said that the pipeline construction companies would have to abide by all county level ordinances related to setbacks and other safety things. That got taken out. And so I think that when we see that the vote was 73 to 20, I mean, you have to believe that they probably would have had 51 votes to pass this bill in its original form. But the Republican caucus in the House, they tend to not bring a bill to the floor unless it has 51 votes just from Republicans only. So that was what the floor manager said. I mean, he acknowledged during the debate that he supported the original version of the bill. Certain things had to be taken out just to get them over the finish line. And for whatever reason, he wasn't working with Democrats to see what they could cobble together to get a majority for.
Do you still think that the bill is DOA in the state Senate?
I think so. I just checked about an hour ago. So it was referred to the Senate Commerce Committee, but it has not been assigned to a subcommittee, nor has a subcommittee been scheduled. And of course, as we just mentioned with this funnel deadline, it would need to be approved by a subcommittee and the full Senate Commerce Committee by the end of this week. And I don't see any sign that that's going to happen. I know that a lot of people are pressuring some of the Republican Senate leadership on this, that they're trying to get this brought to a vote, but I just don't really see it happening.
Also last week, the House advanced a bill that would allow some forms of birth control for women to be dispensed without a prescription.
Yeah, so this is something that was part of the governor's broad health care bill. And for whatever reason, when the Senate Republicans approved the governor's bill, they took out that provision. Then they passed a separate bill where they added something on pharmacists can provide a birth control without a prescription. The House language is a little bit different. It requires, among other things, that within 27 months that the person receiving hormonal birth control would have to see a doctor, a physician, or healthcare provider. And so I'm sure there will be some haggling between House and Senate Republicans. I mean, certainly it seems like there are easily enough votes to get this through, but the precise language, I'm not sure. And I still haven't really understood why the Senate Republicans took that out of the governor's bill, because when they added it to a different bill, it passed by 47 votes to 3. So it's not as if there was this large group of Iowa Senate Republicans who oppose this greater access to birth control.
The House was very busy last week. It approved also a bill toughening penalties for distributing and selling fentanyl, and this was very nearly a unanimous vote.
It was close. It was 91 to 3. There was a little bit of disagreement during the House debate. The State Representative Megan Srinivas, who is a physician, she offered an amendment that failed on a party line vote that would have legalized fentanyl test strips. She said that would be important. A number of other states have already done that. It's prevented some accidental overdoses. But the Republican floor manager said that they had spoken with law enforcement groups and they were not in support of that. So that, I think the Democrats would have been happier with the bill with that amendment, but most of the Democrats did end up voting for the bill even without it.
And very briefly, the House approved on, again, a very significant vote, almost unanimous, not quite, increased penalties for felons in possession of a firearm.
Yes, this was 88-6, but I will say that one of the Democrats warned during the debate that on whenever there is a criminal justice bill, they have to have what's called a minority impact statement that describes what the likely impact is on the corrections budget and also how this would affect non-whites. And both of those bills, it was predicted that it would increase costs in the criminal justice system, and particularly the one for possession of a firearm. The fiscal note said that it was expected to have a racially disparate out impact. And so that came up briefly during the debate, and I think that is why six of the House Democrats voted against that bill.
It's 15 after the hour, wherever you're listening to us, and you are in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin, and we're here every week at this time to talk quickly about politics, Iowa style, and how it's affecting all of us. We're talking quickly because so much went on last week. All right, the House also approved a bill on domestic abuse and leases. This was interesting.
Yes, and this is another one where the final vote was unanimous, but don't let that mislead you. There was disagreement during the debate. So the idea is that people who are victims of domestic abuse or stalking can terminate their lease without being penalized. But there were Democrats who wanted the bill to be worded in such a way so that other people it living in the apartment could also terminate the lease. And there was a concern that if somebody was dangerous or stalking, that one person might be able to get out of the lease, but that other people might be left holding the bag. But it didn't rise to the level of people voting against the overall bill, but there was an amendment that a lot of Democrats weren't happy with in that bill.
And the House also passed a bill establishing midwife licensing advances.
This is something that has been going on for 20 years. People have been trying to pass a midwife licensing. This is for what are called certified professional midwives. So that's different from certified nurse midwives, like who work at the Mary Greeley Hospital in Ames. They're a certified nurse midwife. Certified professional midwives have a different type of training, and they've never been licensed in Iowa. And it's just something that has had trouble getting through the legislature until last year. It never even got a vote. Last year, the Iowa House passed it overwhelmingly. It got killed in an Iowa Senate committee. But I did look this afternoon. An Iowa Senate subcommittee is going to be considering this tomorrow. And I do anticipate that this midwife licensing bill is going to be approved in the Iowa Senate this year. This is something that a lot of people feel will improve options for birthing Iowans, both in urban and in rural areas, especially with so many rural hospitals no longer offering labor and delivery. There is going to be increased demand for midwife services.
And finally, in the House last week, there was a debate over county supervisor elections in really three counties, Story, Johnson, and Blackhawk, and it was obviously transparent about what was trying to be affected here.
Well, Representative Dave Dio, who's a Republican from rural Story County, he is the main person pushing for this bill. Most Iowa counties can choose one of three methods to elect their county supervisors. And one of them is electing them at large, that all county members vote for all supervisors. And then one is electing them by districts. The third one is a little bit combined. But in any case, Dave Dio wants certain counties to be forced to use this elect the county supervisors by district. Of course, that would benefit Republicans in a county like Story, where you would probably have a couple of districts that would include mostly Ames, and then you'd have one district that would include outlying areas in the county that wasn't Ames. So the original version of the bill would have applied to all counties with populations above 60,000. That's 10 counties. The Senate changed it to say only the five counties that have populations greater than 125,000. And when it came back to the House, he offered this amendment that said, well, actually, instead of doing it by population, let's say only the counties that contain Regents Universities, that's the University of Iowa, Iowa State, and the University of Northern Iowa, let's say that only those counties have to have these county supervisors elected by district. And of course, that looked like a brazenly partisan decision because those are three heavily Democratic counties. So it was a very acrimonious debate. And this is something I don't see very often. The House Majority Leader stood up and asked for unanimous consent to withdraw the bill. I don't know whether it will be brought back. They ended up not voting on it. Usually they don't bring something to the floor unless they're intending to vote on it. But this one, it didn't, it devolved into a really contentious debate.
But wait, there's still more in the State House. We're not done with them yet because House Republicans proposed spending $8.5 billion in the upcoming budget year. That's about a 4.5% hike from the current year.
Yes, and it's not that far off from what the governor wants to spend and the Republican leaders in the Senate. This is something we've seen before that for some reason the House Republicans usually want to spend a little more than the Senate Republicans do. So first they have to agree on a total number for how much they're spending. Then they have to agree on the different areas of the budget, how much each of those are going to get. And so then they drill down to the level of how much each agency is going to get. So this is something that will be worked out. But one of the things that the House Speaker, Pat Grassley, said is that they want to spend an extra $50 million, and part of that is to give nursing homes a higher Medicaid reimbursement rate. There have been several nursing homes in rural areas that have closed, and that causes a lot of disruption in rural communities. And I imagine that the House Republicans representing those communities are probably the ones pushing for this to be included as part of a budget priority.
And one more note from the House, and then we're going to move on to the Senate. Some House lawmakers, a couple of them, one Democrat, one Republican, are teaming together. They want to end Major League Baseball blackouts in telecasts in Iowa.
Yes. Well, this, some bills are designed to solve a problem and some bills are designed to call attention to a problem. And that's really what this is. J.D. Scholten, a former minor league baseball player, pitcher, teamed up with Republican Bobby Kaufman. And a lot of people are unhappy about these Major League Baseball blackouts. The Iowa legislature doesn't really have the authority to regulate this. And they, when pressed on it, they admitted that this is probably not something that they can do. But the House Minority Leader, Jennifer Confer, said it's something they want to call attention to it, and they're hoping that Major League Baseball and the federal regulators will work this out.
All right, I've got the stopwatch going. We've got 9 minutes left. We're going to get through the state Senate. First of all, last week they passed Governor Reynolds' education bill.
Yes, this was a big one. There was a significant amendment, but most of what the governor wanted in her education bill got through. This was a straight party line vote, 34 to 16. The schools could not provide any instruction on gender identity or sexual orientation in grades K through 6. There would be provisions that support parents' access to curriculum materials and what's in libraries. Also, school staff would have to notify parents if they thought that the child was being a different or presenting themselves as a different gender in school. The one thing that was changed that's significant is that the governor had wanted this statewide removal list so that if any book was removed in one school district, it would go on the statewide list, and then anyone elsewhere in the state would need parental consent to check it out. The Republican floor manager said this would be a little bit too cumbersome. And so what they proposed instead was an amendment that says any books describing or depicting a sex act are not to be allowed in school libraries. So that was contentious during the debate because a lot of Democrats pointed out there could be quite a few books, classic literature, that contain descriptions of a sex act, including, for instance, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Okay, and in a separate vote, they passed a bill restricting books and instruction related to LGBTQ identities.
Yes, I mean, so this is yeah, I mean there are several overlapping bills here that it's going to all have to be worked out between the House and the Senate. But yes, several of these bills have similar, it's a parental rights bill. And one thing that I thought was interesting, they added an amendment to this bill that said that there's a fundamental constitutionally protected right of parents to guide their own children's upbringing. And that includes education and medical care and several other things. And then they added a line that said, subject to Senate File 538, that is the bill that we discussed earlier that the governor just signed that bans gender-affirming care for people under age 18, even if the parents want that.
And the Senate also passed a bill under which Iowans receiving public assistance benefits would face new asset tests and regular checks to determine their eligibility.
Yeah, so we've talked about this before. The federal food assistance is 100% federally funded, but this bill would create a new asset test in Iowa. And so there could be thousands of people who currently receive the federal food assistance that's called SNAP who would not qualify under this bill. Or there also, and this was something that Democrats brought up repeatedly during the debate, there could be people who qualify for it but aren't able to get through the bureaucratic hurdles. And when the state of Pennsylvania established something like this about 10 years ago, they ended up repealing it several years later because they found that a lot of people were excluded from getting food benefits, even though they qualified. So this again was a party line vote, 34 to 16. Actually, the House is going to be considering this in a subcommittee tomorrow. And so that's Tuesday. And so I'm curious to see how much the House changes this.
Let's buzz through a couple of more Des Moines Register polls. Among them, a new one that showed most Iowans oppose the governor's plan to require parental consent before a student can check out a book in the library that was removed in another school district in the state.
Yes, and we saw in some of these polls that a narrow majority supported some of the Republican agenda, but this was one where people didn't like it. And as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, that Senate Republicans did take out that statewide removal list from the bill. So, and I don't know what the House is going to do with that. But for now, they're more inclined to just ban certain types of books that depict sex acts from all school libraries rather than having a list that the State Department of Education would manage.
And another new poll shows a majority of Iowans say their family values align with those of their public school district.
Well, and this was interesting because 65% said that they think public schools in their district align with their family values. But it kind of reminded me of the traditional polls they do on Congress, where people will say they hate Congress, they don't approve of what Congress is doing, but they like their own member of Congress, they like their own representative. And but it was so I found this poll a little hard to interpret. I mean, 43% said they thought families had about the right amount of control over what's taught in schools. And 38% said families had too little control, and 12% said they had too much control. Of course, the Republican legislative majority is in the process of giving parents more control over what's taught in school.
Let's do one more new poll. And this one showed that a plurality of Iowans approve of the new $2 million limit on damages for pain and suffering in medical malpractice cases, tort reform.
This was very close. I mean, 47% to 44%. It's almost within the margin of error of the poll. So yes, I mean, a plurality do approve of it, but I would say it showed that people are divided on it. And this medical malpractice caps, we discussed this a few weeks ago when the governor signed it. I mean, most people are not going to be directly affected by this. The small number of people who are the victims of medical malpractice are the ones who are going to really feel the impact. But most Iowans are probably not going to notice that this law was enacted.
3 minutes left. Iowa, word came down last week, is no longer going to take part in a multi-state program in which states share voter registration information in order to manage their own voting lists and prevent election fraud. What's the story behind this thing?
Well, I don't really know why all of a sudden this has become an issue where states with Republican secretaries of state are following this. There seems to be a lot of suspicion about this electronic registration center. And I have, in talking with people who work in elections offices or in county elections offices, they don't really understand what the concern is. But former President Trump has criticized the program. And so I think that it's the path of least resistance for Republican elected officials to withdraw.
All right. And here's a story that we've actually been following for a couple of years now, and there was a new development in it last week. It involves a Workday, which is an enterprise software company. And they hired this company to update the state's financial management system. It's been a mess. And last week, the state decided to end the agreement with them.
Oh, this was a classic, what's known as a Friday news dump, a late Friday afternoon news release. So it's difficult to follow up because people aren't in the office to answer your questions. Or maybe in my case, they just ignored my emails and asking the follow-up questions. But yes, Workday, this was a contract the state signed in 2019. It was controversial already because of the expense. It became more controversial when Governor Reynolds tried to spend $21 million in CARES Act funds related to COVID relief on this. The state auditor and federal auditors said, no, this is not something that you can spend pandemic aid on. So she returned that, and the state legislature ended up appropriating money. But Workday was implemented first by Iowa State University before the state signed this agreement. And it's been a really difficult transition at Iowa State, particularly the accounting side. And so the state already did implement the human services side of Workday, but they were supposed to last summer move to Workday for accounting. They delayed that, and then it culminated in this canceling the contract. But they won't answer questions such as how much did they pay Workday to get out of this contract? How much are they paying this other vendor to do the different system? But and also what I'm trying to find out is Iowa State going to continue to use Workday? Because it caused a lot of problems with it, even delayed the entire state's financial report because of the problems getting accurate numbers from Iowa State.
Laura, 10 seconds. It's funnel week again. Deadline. It's going to be crazy.
Oh, yeah. Lots of bills I'm keeping an eye on. There's a criminal justice reform bill. As I mentioned, the food assistance bill is in subcommittee tomorrow, looking to see what happens with several subcommittees in the Senate. But I don't think that eminent domain bill is going to be getting through.
All right, we'll be following it next week. You take care this week, Laura.
I will do.
You have been listening to Capital Week, or as we like to call it on these past nights, Action News Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio, your listening post for politics, Iowa style. We are Dennis Hart and Laura Bellin, your co-anchors. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will be back here next week in the same time slot when we'll talk about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about politics in Iowa. We hope you can join us. Until then, thank you so much for being with us, and we hope you have a safe, happy, and healthy week.